You're listening to the Live Free Now podcast, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. And now your host, John Bush. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. Today, we are going to be talking about the philosophies of libertarianism, anarchism, voluntarism, agorism, anarcho-capitalism, even some left-leaning anarchist philosophies like anarcho-syndicalism. And we're going to break it all down and explore what their philosophical foundations are and how these philosophies relate to the modern world. It's all about freedom, peace and freedom, and super excited to talk about this today. Part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because I did a video recently that was titled Trump, Biden, or Agorism, or self-governance it was. And there were some people that were having some, they had some questions and said they thought maybe we at least need some minimal form of government. There's been some pushback on some of the videos that we do, rightfully so. And so we're going to explore some of that as well. We are live streaming on the Conscious Resistance Network. We're live streaming on some of my Facebook and YouTube channels as well. And then this will soon be a podcast over at livefreenow.show. I want to invite you to check out livefreenow.show and subscribe. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. We do the show live so we can interact with the audience, so we can have access to this wonderful network. And then we upload it to the podcast for those of you out there that prefer the audio format. Also, shout out to our sponsors, freeounceofkratom.com. This is what the website looks like when you go to freeounceofkratom.com. So controversial, I can't even put the actual link on my personal Facebook and YouTube because YouTube bans me whenever I share this link, freeounceofkratom.com. You can go here, just pay $5 shipping and handling, and get yourself a free ounce. If you're listening to us on the Conscious Resistance, go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com, bros.freeounceofkratom.com. You can get a free ounce right there. Super helpful, helps people with all sorts of stuff. So that's what that looks like right there. Just want to shout out our sponsors, Kratom, Brave Botanicals. Okay, let's get right down to it. First, we'll start with the philosophy of libertarianism, which really grew out of the classical liberal philosophy that started being espoused in the 17th and 18th centuries. So for the longest time, essentially all there was feudalism and serfdom and the divine right of kings. And it was a really nasty situation when it comes to people's liberty and freedom. And it was those rulers that had total control over the public. And there was no ideas. Well, if people talked about liberty or stepping out and speaking against the king, oftentimes they got drawn and quartered. So it was a really miserable existence. But then people started philosophizing and wanting more freedom. And of course, we had the Magna Carta and the classical liberal revolutions, the English Civil War, the American Revolution, and the French Revolution. And there were figures during these times like John Locke, for example, and people started talking about civil governance and the idea that there is no divine right of kings and government is instituted with people that want to have more order and have more justice in society, to take things out of the state of nature, as John Locke said. And that maybe had some noble thoughts at one point, some noble beginnings. But as we'll talk about, the state really is the biggest enemy of the people. And Lord Acton said around this time, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So these ideals started forming, classical liberal ideals, a higher standard of living for the masses, greater mobility, the idea that it's not just the royalty and the monarchs and the lords that should have a say in government and that should have a right to self-determination. Rather, all people should have that. There was also talk about equality under the law, which never existed before. And these ideas started to have popular support, and they led to some pretty major uprisings. And a lot of these ideals really informed some of the founding fathers, like Thomas Jefferson especially. But the problem with the classical liberalism is that it still relies on a state or some sort of civil government in order to organize society. And as we shall see when we explore the philosophy of libertarianism and anarchism, in order for human beings to flourish and really have the full exercise of their rights, there can't be a state, because the state, in order for it to exist, it necessarily must violate those rights. So let's break down the philosophy of liberty. I'm sorry, of libertarianism. So libertarianism essentially is rooted in the idea of self-ownership, the idea that I own my body and I have control over my body, right? Ownership meaning who controls something. That's a lot of times when we talk about property, it's all about who has control over that asset, that business, that money, or yourself, right? And so you have a couple different choices. Either you can own yourself and control yourself, or another person owns you and controls you, like slavery, or a group of people owns you and controls you, right? And so the philosophy of libertarianism holds that we as individuals own ourselves. And as a result, we have the right not to be violently aggressed upon, especially in an institutional manner. And this is where we get the philosophy of non-aggression, the non-aggression principle, which really is an underpinning tenet of the philosophy of libertarianism. The idea that it is unethical, it's immoral to initiate aggression against another person, another human being. And from there, if you apply that consistently, it leads you all the way to anarchism and voluntarism. Now, there are two different camps within the libertarian world. There's the anarchists and voluntarists, or anarcho-capitalists or agorists, right? Those that reject the state. And then there's the minarchist libertarians. So just because someone identifies as a libertarian doesn't necessarily mean that they're an anarchist. I would argue, however, that the consistent application of the libertarian philosophy necessarily should and would lead towards anarchism, specifically the consistent application of the non-aggression principle. Because if you are to have a state, even a microstate or minarchist state, then there still needs to be some sort of taxation mechanism in order for that state to function. And in that taxation mechanism, we have someone's rights being violated. So you got the self-ownership, non-aggression principle. Another big tenet is the right to the fruits of your labor, or the right to own property, and the right to voluntarily exchange that property with other people. Of course, this modern government that we have today wholeheartedly violates the right of free exchange with other people. I really like the term voluntary exchange when it comes to describing economic principles. A lot of people get all frustrated and upset about capitalism as a banner, as a fighting creed. I like capitalism personally. I like this camcorder that I'm presenting to you on. I like this awesome Audio Technica microphone and this big screen that you can't see here, where I can see all your comments here, like this guy here, NAP. I don't know if he's saying NAP is greater than bootlicking or NAP equals bootlicking, but capitalism really does produce a whole lot of stuff. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about economics and stuff as well. And so you have voluntary exchange. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can kind of leave it there. As a political philosophy, libertarianism doesn't necessarily decide all sorts of other philosophical, moral questions, like what we ought not to do with our private lives. Really, it's a very tight political philosophy that deals with how human beings ought to interact with one another, or if there is to be a government, how that government ought to interact with the individual and respect the individual's rights. Now, these minarchist libertarians, they want to see what I forget the author of this. This is a essay that I read in an ethics class in college, a philosophy class, the night watchman state idea. Maybe someone can help me in the comments here. But it's the idea that the only function of government should be security and defense. And justice, essentially. Security and defense are pretty much the same thing. Security and justice and securing the borders of the nation state, right? And so me, as an anarchist, I reject the notion of nation state altogether. I believe that nation states have created an environment where those individuals that are born within a massive geographic area are subjected to the laws that are dictated by a very small group of people. I believe that it's the advent of the nation state that made it really easy for governments to engage in these horrific, hellish wars, massive wars, World War I, World War II. It's highly unlikely, absent this mechanism of taxation that the nation state enjoys, would they be able to put together the resources and the funds in order to go and wage all these wars. People very likely wouldn't voluntarily contribute to give all these wars. So I reject the nation state. I would like to see things decentralized, micro nations, micro communities, city states. And then people often talk about, well, how are we going to defend ourselves from foreign aggressors, right? You could still have a confederation of city states, communes, micro communities that bands together and supports the whole. You know, people oftentimes are tied together with certain cultural beliefs and different tribal and familial backgrounds. And so these people that share common reverence for freedom, perhaps, could still have a mutual defense compact, much like the Hanseatic League, where there was a bunch of city states and they all banded together to protect themselves from foreign aggression. So I'm going to try to make this conversational. Like, I don't have a presentation or anything. I never rarely do. I just want to break down libertarianism, anarchism, voluntarism, agorism. There's a lot of confusion on these terms, but hopefully I can convey them in a simple way so people can understand. And we already have Kathy Hopper, my friend Kathy Hopper here asking, John, I hope you define anarchy. Some are very confused by the meaning of that word. So yeah, anarchy has a lot of baggage. When people bring up anarchism, they often think of chaos, right? The word itself has been associated with just a state of chaos. Like if it's in your family household and the kids are running around half naked and there's like throwing clothes everywhere and you're like, this is anarchy, right? And then it's also identified by like black bloc type anarchists that I would even call them destructors, not even anarchists, that, you know, they protest the Starbucks and the World Trade Organization and they're dressed in all black and they're smashing bricks through the local Starbucks, right? In the minds of many people in the West, that has been the personification of anarchism. But really, when we break down the word, like the etymology of the word, the an root means without, and then the archos is without rulers. And that's essentially all that it means. It doesn't mean without rules. It doesn't mean chaos. And in fact, I would argue that whenever you have a state of anarchy, an environment without rulers or external coercion or external governments or politicians or whatever, they're forcing their will upon people, you actually have a beautiful spontaneous order. And there's been studies that show, as an example, I forget what country it was, might have been China of all places, which is ironic, where they don't have street lights and they don't have traffic signs and stuff. And they found that there was even less occurrence of accidents because spontaneous order kicked in. And when you depend and you rely on the traffic light or whatever, you kind of let your guard down and you have a false sense of security. But whenever you're more conscious and responsible for your actions and how your actions affect others, you tend to be a little more cautious and moving forward. So there's a whole beautiful thing, spontaneous order, and oftentimes a great rebuttal to people that are like, anarchy could never happen. That's not possible in the least bit. I like to point out to people that probably 98% of your life is lived in a state of anarchy where you don't have to ask permission per se, or where you aren't guided, right? Maybe not if you're wearing your mask all day and in your mask mandate area, then every time you wear the mask, essentially that's not anarchism. But whenever you wake up and you choose what clothes to wear, you choose what meal to make, you get in your car and you drive down the road and you're avoiding the cat that's running across the street, you make decisions on how you want to spend your money. That is all basically in a state of anarchism. So that's the definition of anarchism. And again, there's two distinctions within the libertarian philosophy. You have minarchists that believe we should have a minimal state, a night watchman state that deals primarily with defense of the state, justice, ensuring contracts, holding people accountable, and security. And so that's the night watchman minimalist state. But in order for that to exist, you have to have taxation to subsidize it and to fund the operations, or even to fund an external military or military force in order to protect that geographic area. And then the libertarian anarchists, which as of late have been taking up the banner of voluntarist, another ism, voluntarism. I really like the term voluntarism because it doesn't have all the baggage that goes along with anarchist. However, I do like to identify as an anarchist precisely because I like the fact that it's provocative. Just like the Freedom Cell Network, I specifically chose to call it Freedom Cell as a play on terror cell. Well, there's no terrorism going on and no initiation of violence, but I like the provocative tactic of language, selecting language that's provocative that gets people to like kind of snap out of it. Tony Robbins uses that methodology when in his self-help stuff with cuss words. He'll like cuss and just be really hard on someone. And it's like an interruption, a pattern interruption mechanism to get people to be like, whoa, huh? But voluntarism has a nicer veneer to it. And essentially voluntarism is just the idea that all human relationships should be voluntary. And if we had an anarchist society or a truly consistent libertarian society, that would be what it would look like. All the human relationships would be voluntary. I like to use the term, what we're striving for, our mutually beneficial voluntary associations, right? Assuming that we have rational actors that don't have issues with their head or they're not acting irrationally, all human action that someone chooses to voluntarily engage in is necessarily for mutual benefit to improve their condition from where it was before. All economic exchanges go that way as well. That's why in a genuinely free market, which Murray Rothbard defined free market as the sum total of all voluntary human interaction taking place. In a genuinely free market, people would only engage in an economic exchange were it to benefit them or improve their condition. And this is kind of one of the tenets of praxeology, or the study of human action, that Ludwig von Mises came out with. Now, he was a classical liberal libertarian economist, one of the first big Austrian economists to really put Austrian economics out there. And he didn't go so far as to consistently apply some of those classical liberal tenets like future libertarians did, specifically Murray Rothbard, especially. Murray Rothbard's like considered the father of libertarianism and really put out a whole tome of work to identify the philosophy of libertarianism. So whenever people talk about like, what's libertarianism, that's kind of like the standard, right? Although it's not holier than thou. He doesn't have all the answers. And we can take from different philosophies, pull what we like, leave what we don't like, and plow forward. Like again, for a while, I chose to avoid capitalism. But now that everyone's so anti-capitalist and there's like all this nastiness about capitalism, I kind of like bringing it back. I don't know. There's an element to my activism and communication where I deliberately want to provoke certain reactions in people. And so like, yeah, capitalism isn't necessarily an evil thing. It's essentially the meaning of capitalism is private ownership of the means of production, and more specifically, entrepreneurs engaging in free enterprise, utilizing capital, which is money or resources or even labor, in order to fulfill the wants and needs of consumers, customers, to make a profit. And that alone isn't a bad thing, right? Let's get into some more isms. So you have capitalism, and a lot of times most of the criticisms of what people believe to be capitalism is actually what could be defined as corporatism, which is capitalism plus state cronyism, special favors, special deals, regulatory benefits, protectionism, revolving door politics, where someone in the head of a pharmaceutical company becomes a regulator in the FDA and vice versa. And so oftentimes that's what people point to. I will say, however, so John Mackey has this concept of conscious capitalism, and it's kind of like putting a more of a human, compassionate touch on capitalism, which is what I'm all about. Like, I'm a capitalist. I utilize capital. I even import kratom in bulk by the kilos from Indonesia. And then I mix up my creativity and I break it down into smaller packages. And I help other people get off of pharmaceuticals and quit drugs and quit addiction and find more peace and balance, right? So there's nothing unethical about what I'm doing. In fact, the farmers in Indonesia, which has a much smaller economy than the United States, they're benefiting immensely, and their standard of living is rising from this global capitalism, right? So there's nothing wrong with that in itself. However, there are a lot of capitalists that don't care too much for other human beings or for the environment for that matter, and they're so profit-driven that the desire to make a bunch of money and have power and accumulate wealth overshadows a natural human check and balance to be good stewards of the earth or to be good to our fellow human beings. And so in some instances, exploitation can take place, right? A lot of the socialists, socialism being the government, the state owns the means of production and utilizes state mechanisms in order to provide social services for the people, and also tries to redistribute wealth so there's more of an equal footing and equity. In all reality, the funny thing is socialism and communism oftentimes are financed by high power capitalists and globalists. This is even how Lenin and Trotsky came to power. There's this great book called Wall Street and the Rise of the Bolshevik Revolution by this guy named Anthony Sutton. He also wrote Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And so finance capital, international banking interests actually financed communism in order to leverage it for global power. So oftentimes these movements, these terms can get can be exploited themselves. But so that's something to be cautious of. Like, that's why for a while I would just go back to voluntary exchange. But then I became, you know, I recognized that, you know, not voluntary exchange helped to create this, but it was also capitalism and a mixing of capital and finance and investments and entrepreneurs taking risk. So there's that. But essentially, it's just all about freeing the market. Let's talk a little bit about Austrian economics. Before we do that, let's go to some of your comments. I'm kind of rambling, but hopefully you guys like it. There's a lot of people tuned in, so appreciate that. Alyssa says, I'm going to order Kratom for the first time. Thanks, John. Right on. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions. I can be reached at 512-773-6102. Don't troll me now, but if anybody has any questions about Kratom, then I can help them out there. And again, the website is freeounceofkratom.com, freeounceofkratom.com. If you're watching on the Conscious Resistance, go to bros.freeounceofkratom.com. So thank you for letting us know that you're going to be making a purchase. I'm 3 hours from any city, so don't have any issues. That's great. The government does more harm than good. That it does. In fact, I don't think it does much good at all. I think it's bad news bears. Mike McKay over in California says, I pay 40% in taxes in California and still drive over potholes every day. Man, Mike, I strongly implore you to vote with your feet and get the hell out of that socialist communist hellhole that is just in total decline. Sourdough says, minarchist with a little pukey face. All right, that a boy. Just kidding. Laugh out loud. Socialism can be cool with no state. That's something to consider too, like a kind of voluntary socialism where people come into a situation, a commune, a society, and they voluntarily opt into redistributing their wealth, egalitarianism, everybody has to work a certain amount of time or whatever. There's no profit motive. And if there is excess profit, then it gets redistributed to the group as a whole. If somebody wants to jam like that, then I'm cool with that. But just don't force it upon me. I think as anarchists, voluntarists, libertarians, if we can honor other people's political philosophies, as long as they don't try to force them upon us, I think we can gain some ground there. I mean, of course, communists and tyrants don't care about any of that, but it's like, why do we think that we have all the answers? I just know what I think is best for me and my family and my crew. I don't purport to know all the answers and know them and be so confident in them that I want to force them upon you. I think that's arrogant. So, socialism could potentially work. I wouldn't be into it, but if people wanted to do it, geez, after looking into libertarianism, I really bought into abolishing the ATF and repealing the war on drugs. I still like libertarianism ideals, but JoJo wants Alan Dershowitz in the Supreme Court of the United States. Is Alan Dershowitz the attorney that defended old Jeffrey Epstein? Because if that's a trip, if that's the case. But we should definitely abolish the ATF and the war on drugs. It's caused so much freaking harm. Hey, there's Rika, the hopeful voluntarist. Hey, thanks for joining us. You're always on there. Capitalism is demonized. Sure, it's bad when capitalism can buy a government, but it's not the root of the problem. The root of the problem is most definitely government. Balloon says, freedom sells. Idea is becoming more ideal than libertarianism. Yeah, it's actual like living liberty and all that stuff. So that's great. How about a system that everyone's needs are met without a monetary system? Okay, so there's a lot of people on this on the Conscious Resistance Network, I presume you're watching there, that are like, don't like money. And they want to have a system without a monetary system. Well, so let's talk about money and economics. We can talk about Austrian economics a little bit too. Austrian economics has a reverence for sound money, which is like asset-based money, preferably gold-backed money because gold is finite, right? And then there's some criteria about what actually makes money. So essentially what money is a medium of exchange, and it can take a variety of different forms. It could be conch shells. It could be cigarettes in prison. It could be cryptocurrency. It could be fiat currency is another type of money. But the sound money Austrian economists prefer something, money to be pegged to a finite resource that takes a considerable amount of energy in order to bring to fruition, in order to bring to market. This is so you can avoid inflation. If it's pegged to gold, for example, you can't have more paper dollars in circulation. Again, the paper dollars and the silver certificates are supposed to be redeemable for the hard money. That's essentially how banking started. It was like people were trading with gold and silver, but that was cumbersome and they didn't want to lose their stuff. So the banks would hold on to the gold and silver and issue these paper certificates. And then people would trade with the paper certificates with the understanding that they would be redeemable for their gold and silver should they want to cash out and get their physical bullion back. But what the banks slowly started doing is what's called fractional reserve, whereby they would have a certain amount of physical assets or now money on hand, and then they would lend out two times as much, three times as much, four times as much. And the idea is this can work so long as everyone doesn't come in to get their gold or their hard money or whatever back at the same time. That would be a run on the bank. Well, this became institutionalized, and now we actually have fractional reserve banking at a rate of 10 to 1, meaning if I have the Bank of Bush, I have $1 million in reserve, I can loan out $10 million. This really contributes to inflation. Essentially, what inflation is, people believe inflation to be simply rising prices. The rising prices is a reaction to the inflation of the money supply, the adding of money. And so what we have now is a terrible, terrible money system through the Federal Reserve System, right? If you look at your dollars in my wallet, everybody's done this exercise before, but let's do it again. If you look at your dollars, you see that they, at the top, they have Federal Reserve note on them. Federal Reserve note. It used to be the Department of, the Department of Treasury is still identified on here, but so is the United States Federal Reserve System, Federal Reserve, Department of Treasury. These used to be silver certificates, and they were redeemable for the silver or gold. But back in 1933, FDR went and confiscated through executive order a bunch of people's gold and took control over it. Took it away. This was a response to all the stuff that was going on with the Depression and all the war. Really, it was like some Illuminati shit going on. And then again, under the Nixon administration, we have what was called the Bretton Woods Agreement, which formally took the United States dollar off of the gold reserves, not being backed by gold anymore, which essentially opened the door to pure inflation and manipulation by the Federal Reserve Bank. So the point is, while this money is funny money and it's fiat, it's basically backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. And it's like, if you don't use it, you can be in trouble. If you don't accept it for your business, you could be in trouble. And then there's a whole military that if Iraq, for example, or Libya wants to abandon the United States dollar as their reserve currency for trading oil, then they'll go to war with you. It's really what it's all backed. But at the end of the day, having a medium of exchange greatly enhances the health of an economy. So if you want to have fancy widgets for all the anti-money people out there, if you want to have a phone or a laptop or the car that you drive in, it greatly would benefit you in order to have a monetary system. Without a monetary system, humans by design are going to want to trade with one another because there is specialization, division of labor. Some people are better at farming than others. Some people are better at being a doctor. Some people are better communicators. Some people are better doing videos. Some people are good salespeople, so on and so forth. And so when humans cooperate to develop a pencil, for example, there's this great essay called iPencil. There's all sorts of different moving parts and pieces that come together through anarchy and through spontaneous order in order to produce a widget that gets traded or sold to someone who has all these different skill sets, right? And so it is very beneficial to have a medium of exchange. Ideally, in the future, it's not the Federal Reserve note because that helps to finance foreign wars of aggression and oppression of Americans. But the medium of exchange helps when people exchange goods and services. And so early on, there was barter, right? So I have cows on my farm and I milk the cows every day to produce milk, gallons of milk. And the guy across the street, he's a chicken farmer. He's just shelling out eggs left and right. Well, we often trade milk for eggs. Works out great. No worries. No government involvement. It's a simple barter exchange. But what happens when the two people that are, when somebody wants something from another human being and they don't have a match in the wants and needs department? So it's like, hey, I could really use some eggs, but I don't have milk anymore, or the cow died, or it's just a totally different person that wants eggs and they don't have anything to offer the egg farmer that he wants or desires. So in this instance, it benefits us in order to have money, a medium of exchange that can act as an intermediary between the two people so they can engage in exchange. And if you want to have a economy, right? So there's ways that you could do this on a micro scale where it's like a gift economy and we all farm together and we have things organized in a more egalitarian way. You can have that on a micro scale. But on a larger scale where you import capital, resources, precious metals, all sorts of different parts, moving pieces from other areas, even from other countries, you better have money in order to facilitate all of that trade and that transaction. So at the end of the day, money isn't necessarily an evil thing. I think money has great value. In a moneyless society, like I want to excel. I don't want to do an egalitarian society where we all just kind of farm and we're all just living together and we're all on equal footing per se. I want to have equal rights. I want to have equality under whatever rule system that we come up with. but I want to be able to excel at life and produce a lot of income so I can grow and get a fancy luxury RV to travel across the continent with my family and my girlfriend. And I would love to have a freaking private jet someday to be able to go wherever the hell I want in no time at all. I would love to have so much excess wealth that I can invest in all sorts of activist enterprises and other businesses and startups and so on and so forth. And so in an egalitarian, moneyless society, I wouldn't be able to do that. That's one of the problems with these folks like, what's his name? The Ubuntu movement and the resource-based economy and stuff like that. I'm cool if you want to jam like that. I don't think it'll work on a mass scale. I don't think it'll work to have the innovation that comes with self-interest and the motivation to exceed and to profit and stuff like that. So, I mean, in that regard, I'm a capitalist, not a communist in the least bit. Okay, so we talked about the roots of libertarianism, self-ownership, non-aggression principle, voluntary exchange, free markets rise out of that as well. As Murray Rothbard defined free markets as the sum total of all voluntary human action. We talked about libertarianism. We talked about anarchism without rulers, a society without government, without coercive hierarchies, without kings, without prime ministers, without presidents and Congress critters, right? And then voluntarism is essentially like anarchism, but it really focuses on voluntary human relationships, which is a beautiful thing. We're going to talk about agorism here in a sec, but let's go and hit up some of your comments. And then I want to make sure I hit conscious resistance. This is Derek Bros. Michael Tellinger is the guy. I think Derek debated this guy or did a video with him as well. His whole thing was like, you got to do a certain amount of labor and a certain amount of hours every day, so on and so forth. One of my girlfriend's mentor, her name's Erica, she went to an event where he was presenting his Ubuntu idea, and she busted him and was like, well, what are you doing? Seems like you're flying around on planes, visiting different groups and doing public speaking engagements. You're not there doing the 5 hours a week of labor on the farm or whatever. I want to make sure that I get to these comments too, because there was a comment, I don't know if this person's watching right now, but I wanted to respond to some of their questions because they gave some great objections. And if there's anybody watching that has any doubt or thinks that libertarianism is bogus and it's like a bunch of white guys in their basement twiddling their thumbs and never really has any real world application, or if you think anarchism is a terrible idea or it's a good idea except we need government for these particular functions, I would invite you to comment so we can address some of your comments. And we can have a conversation, which is good. Looks like everybody's having a great... I love how on the live videos, people have conversations and chat amongst themselves and all sorts of stuff. It's super duper great. And yes, the Bank of Bush, it's coming. Wah-ah-ah-ah. There's so much money in the medical industry, but without a free market, monopolies like insurance, government, corporations will rape the people. Yeah, government uses its monopoly over finance, over health, all sorts of things to benefit, to pick winners and losers, essentially. Okay, let me respond to this comment here. Check it out. So this was a video I did the other day, a podcast called Trump, Biden, or Self-Governance. And somebody had some critiques of some questions, really. And so I would like to respond to those questions. Maybe they'll tune in, but maybe not. Okay, here we go. Haas Skull says, just let out something that causes me to question the voluntarist perspective, forcing people to follow policies. I think that's something that I said in the video. How else do you stop murder, robbery, and rape if not by using force? How do you stop people from doing things that are going to affect other people's freedom and life when that's what they want to do? There's a big gaping hole in the philosophy that cannot be filled, it seems, except by this thing called government, which is supposed to be a neutral force for good that has simply been corrupted. So maybe just throwing the baby out with the bathwater isn't the solution, but reforming government back down to a very small, insignificant size, except for basics, as stated above, which is what the libertarians were supposed to be about. Okay, so that's a great objection. Let's break that down. So essentially, the way that I always start in responding to these types of critiques or questions is, there is a government. And murder is illegal, last time I checked. In fact, it's often punishable by capital punishment, life in prison, or being put to death. However, people still murder, right? So, unfortunately, we live in a trauma-based society, and there's a lot of pain and trauma and harm that's been inflicted upon people. And oftentimes, two people that have had all sorts of trauma get together, and they just magnify one another's trauma, and this is bad news bears. And what many times happens with murder is it's a crime of passion. Rarely is it someone like predetermined they're going to go do A, B, and C, although maybe with even more trauma and bullying and stuff, that's happening more, like these kids that plan to go shoot up the schools and stuff. Do away with public schools, maybe that would happen less. But the basic response is we do have a government with extremely harsh penalties on murder, and murder still happens, right? So government obviously isn't the answer to solve the murder problem. Another response is, as libertarians and anarchist idealists, we aren't espousing some utopian vision where everyone's going to frolic in the meadow with butterflies and doves being released. That's not what we're talking about at all. We'll never have a world without risk. In fact, I wouldn't even want to have a world without risk. That would be boring. There'd be no adventure. There'd be no uncertainty, right? Humans need certainty in life. We also need uncertainty and variation and change. So in all honesty, I don't know exactly what a stateless society would look like, nor do I know the best way for it to function. I have some ideas. I have some philosophical imperatives. I have some concepts based on my human experience and my research, but I don't know all of the answer. But again, anarchy is without rulers. It's not without rules. In an anarcho-capitalist society, for example, there would still be private security forces that could protect and defend people from private criminals, right? So instead of being taxed in a monopolistic way where you pay your city property tax or whatever, and then you have no choice in the provision of defense, it's just you live in the city of Austin, then you're going to be defended by Austin Police Department. You live in the city of Houston, it's going to be HPD. You live out in the county, it's going to be the county sheriff's department. Every state has the highway patrol or Department of Public Safety. There's no choice. There's no freedom. In a stateless society, in an anarcho-capitalist society, people would be able to choose between different private defense agencies. So there would still be security. It would just come from a private force. And the benefit to that is there's competition. And whenever you have a municipal police department, now, this ain't the case nowadays, it seems, with the defund the police, but for the longest time and in most areas, you have a municipal police department, and no matter what level of service they're delivering to their constituents, they're still going to maintain a budget or grow a budget. Even if they're killing black and brown people like every week, the minorities in marginalized communities are still going to be forced to pay for the police department through their property tax or indirectly paying rent, and the landlord pays the property tax. That's a problematic, that's not good. And so whenever you have a more free society and you have choice, with freedom comes choice, also comes responsibility. You can choose between which defense agency or security agency you want to work with. And in a more capitalist way, the agency is then beholden to the consumer, because if they choose not to do business with them, then they're going to lose out on revenue, right? And hopefully they have good customer service. Yes, I know this could turn into some, you know, the big corporations and companies that control everything, whatever. But ideally, there's different institutions that are competing for your service, and they are there's a mechanism of correction. If they start to slip up, if they act in a way that isn't in line with the contract that you voluntarily signed, then you can choose not to do business with them. Another way that you could protect from murder in a genuinely free society, there would be no regulations about firearms, and more people would use firearms and know how to use them safely and proficiently to defend themselves, their family, and their community. Right? So you could, maybe there are some areas that don't want to do the private security force, or maybe this is a situation where there isn't private security forces to choose from, and people form their own community watch group, their own militia type group. We already saw this experience with the Black Panther Party, for example. They people were getting brutalized. African-Americans were getting routinely brutalized by the police. So they squatted the fuck up and they started doing armed patrols in the community. And they essentially were doing cop watching while having a loaded shotgun. And that was sure provocative, but it sure, you know, protected the guy that was getting pulled over. So that's another option, another alternative. You know, another thing I would probably argue, without this state that just, there's so much division and nastiness and infighting. And a lot of that has to do with when you have a state, everyone is forced to participate, whether they agree with the policies or not. When you have taxation, it makes it harder to earn a living. So you're stressed about money and about fulfilling your needs and providing for your family. And then you have the Federal Reserve Bank, which creates inflation and makes it so you have less purchasing power. So it's even harder for you to buy the loaf of bread, you know, than it was 10 years ago. This adds a lot of stress. And I would argue, absent the state and all this division and all this one size fits all bullshit and all the funny money and taking people's money, maybe people will be a little more peaceful and chill. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of trauma. A lot of trauma comes from the state too, intergenerationally, like dad's getting locked up for smoking grass or whatever. And then the kids grow up without a father. That leads to trauma and they don't have a father figure. And that mixes and messes all sorts of stuff up. That wouldn't exist without a state, you know? There was somebody else that had something on here. This guy, let's see what this guy says. And then I'm going to go to some of your comments as well. And we're going to talk about what agorism is, because agorism is really good. I agree, we need a complete overhaul in this country, starting with getting rid of this huge government. However, I think that we do need some sort of leadership, maybe a small group per town or city, like you were saying, a group of their peers. But how would we deal with the larger issues like other countries? Who would represent us as a country? I feel they would just take advantage and think they can walk in and take over our entire country. We do need something different, but I'm not sure what. That is a great thing to bring up. So if the United States of America were to become some decentralized stateless society, then would that make the U.S. more vulnerable to external invasion? First thing, the beauty that we have in the United States of America is we're protected by the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean. So strategically, defensively, that's a great position to be in, unlike Western Europe or all these Southeast Asia and all these countries are all next to each other. But if we were to break down into smaller city states or communal stuff or whatever, the Republic of Texas, for example, you could still have a mutual defense compact, right? And you could still contribute some resources in order to maintain some military equipment and military might. Additionally, the way that things were supposed to be in the U.S., and one of the reasons why the United States was able to overthrow the British Empire is because there was militia and there was an army like of the Continental Congress, but there was also a bunch of people that just squatted up and were like, we don't like how things are going. We want to have representation, all this stuff. And so they squatted up, right? So, and then I think there was some Chinese general or Japanese general or something that said, if we ever invaded the homeland of the United States, there would be a gun behind every blade of grass, something like that. So an armed population is definitely a big deterrent to the external aggression. But that is a very real concern. And in fact, you know, the state of Texas overthrew the Mexican government and declared its independence right with the Battle of the Alamo and San Jacinto and all that good stuff. And then shortly thereafter, and then they had Republic of Texas, its own little nation state for quite some time, not that long actually. And then shortly thereafter, they decided to join the Union, the growing United States of America. And they did so because they wanted to have protection from the French or if the Mexicans fought again or any other external aggressors, Spain. And so remember there's six different flags that flew over the state of Texas. And so let me see if I can name them. Spain, Mexico, France, United States of America, I guess is one of them. Republic of Texas. I can't name the sixth. So that's what the state of Texas did. And it's like, man, the state of Texas could have been its own nation state that could have protected itself potentially. But that's definitely something to concern ourselves with. So the way that I see things playing out is, let me go ahead and define what agorism is, and then I'll parlay this into it. So agorism, we talked about libertarianism, we talked about anarchism, voluntarism. Agorism is an outgrowth of libertarianism, but more so than being a philosophy, it's more of a strategy, means to an end, right? Samuel Edward Konkin III is the one that came up with this strategy of agorism. And in the New Libertarian Manifesto, he does lay out some philosophy. And he specifically talks about something that I mentioned earlier, that in order to have a free society, we need to have the consistent application of the libertarian philosophy. And we need to have consistency within our means and our ends. So if our ends are a free society, total freedom, libertarianism, a libertarian society, then our means should be consistent with that. And he argued against the Libertarian Party, saying that Libertarian Party politics is not consistent with the end of a free society. What is consistent, the most appropriate means, would be counter-economics, engaging in anti-state activity, engaging in black and gray markets, black markets being those activities or those goods or services which are expressly prohibited by the state. They're illegal, they're banned. Gray market activities being those activities, services, or goods, which in order to engage in said activity, you need permission from the state. So he said, you know, if we want to have a free society, let's just start doing this stuff on our own and let's build our own little networks and our own communities and our own agoras, right? And so that's a very beautiful thing. Agorism.info is a great website. Read the New Libertarian Manifesto. It's a great strategy. Myself, bros, all sorts of activists are way into it. And then we're not just talking about it. We're actually doing it. And we're building these counter-economic communities, these agoras. And so this is how I see things panning out, to kind of recap. We got 10 minutes left. I try to make these an hour. I'll go to some of your comments as well. And hopefully some people have dropped some rebuttals and some criticism to all these philosophies. This is how I think we can achieve freedom, liberty in our lifetime, or at least in our children's lifetime, or at least our grandchildren's lifetime, because we got to adopt the long game. We can't get frustrated and concerned about the politics of the day. We need to start laying the foundation now, that so we plant the seed now and it blooms into the free societies. Let 1,000 free societies bloom, right? And so I don't think that we will see the wholesale collapse of the nation state, which is like a super state institution. You had city states, you had little fiefdoms and stuff, but the nation state is the ultimate. I guess a giant empire would be the ultimate, but that's what we have in the United States of America. People often neglect to remember that the United States started off as 13 colonies on the East Coast. And then it expanded westward with Manifest Destiny all the way out to California. That was other territories controlled by Native Americans. And Mexico went all the way up into New Mexico and Arizona and parts of California, right? So the United States is a giant empire. And when you look at other countries, it's freaking huge, right? Russia is the only one that rivals it, and China's huge as well. But there's a vast geographic area that the United States Empire has overtaken, not to mention Puerto Rico, Guam, Hawaii, Guantanamo Bay. And then on top of all that, there's this great book called Empire of Bases by Chalmers Johnson I read back in college. There are so many United States military bases all over the world. There's an empire of bases, and there's also a financial empire of the Anglo-American establishment. But oftentimes that's not an American empire. That's actually an entity, institution, secret society, roundtable groups that is on a higher level. This is like the Illuminati stuff on a higher level in the United States government. They leverage and use the United States government for their own benefit. So we have those institutions. I don't think that these institutions are necessarily going to go away. I do think that We did an Unloose the Goose episode. Folks that follow me here, you guys would love the Unloose the Goose podcast. Go to unloosethegoose.com. It's like a podcast super group. Jack Spear goes on it. This guy Xavier Hawk, Sal Mayweather, Sal the Agorist. Maybe some of y'all are familiar with him. But there's also this guy named CJ who does the Dangerous History podcast. And he was talking about the things that we're seeing right now in the American political scene are indicative of an empire in decline. Whenever an empire has overextended itself and is starting to lose faith and credit, and the people are starting to fight with one another. And so we could see a fracturing of the United States Empire There's this great book called Bye Bye Miss American Empire that talks about all of the secessionist movements historically and contemporary. And so we could see a fracturing. And in fact, that could be, you know, imagine if Trump holds power, whether legitimately or illegitimately, and like some of these super liberal states like California start breaking off. Honestly, I don't think that would happen because California is probably going to need to be bailed out sooner than later. Some of these more Democrat-run states that are just being run into the ground are probably going to need to be bailed out by the federal government. But maybe Biden takes office and Texas secedes, whatever. I don't think any of this is going to happen on the shorter term, although there are secessionist movements in Colorado and Northwest United States and California. Once like the rural areas in California that are more conservative want to break away from that little pocket there in LA and San Francisco and all that stuff. So I think that we could see some fracturing and some balkanization, but ultimately I believe the best strategy to freedom, it's not going to be a whole 100% totally free society. I don't think that we'll ever see that. I don't think that we'll see some anarchist utopia where the states just are like, oh, well, they're just going to give up power globally, right? So like the communists, they want to have a global communism. And a lot of these folks, like the anti-capitalist socialists and anarchists, I'm doing air quotes for the podcast audience, and the communists, they're not like tolerant like my philosophy is, where it's like, okay, you guys want to do something over here, you guys want to do that over there, that's fine, just don't affect me, don't enforce that upon me. These communists want to have a global communist dictatorship, right? And then they say they'll dissolve the state and so the proletariat can live in harmony, but that's just a red herring. That's false. It's all a means to an end of total control. But I don't want to see it. That would be ideal, but it's not practical to have a totally free earth, right? And so here's where hope lies. I started this little tangent, I don't know, maybe like 5 or 10 minutes ago. Now I'm finally getting to the point. I believe that we as anarchists and agorists and voluntarists ought to adopt a strategy of figuring out a way to have peaceful coexistence with the statists. Okay? So what does that look like? Well, Samuel Edward Konkin talks about different densities of agorism and different pockets of agorism in society. And so I would like to see, and this is what we hope to do with the Freedom Cell Network, which has over 4,000 participants. You can sign up at freedomcells.org. We just start networking and laying the groundwork so we can support one another through mutual aid, so we can work together to achieve common goals. And a lot of these goals can be centered around the fulfillment of our important wants and needs. And so we can create an environment where the benefits that some people receive from the state, social safety nets, for example, health insurance, healthcare and stuff, we have collaborated voluntarily and we are providing those services either through the network itself, through mutual aid, or through sister institutions, companies, entities that have formed around the network in order to cater services to the network. Perfect example is a health share. So once we have a good enough number of people in the Freedom Cells network, I would like to figure out a way to have our own health share instead of health insurance. It's a health share. I currently have one right now. It's called Zion Health Share. I pay $200 a month. If there's to be an emergency or an accident, it's covered over $1,000. I pay up to $1,000. If it's like a $20,000, God forbid, car accident or whatever, I pay $1,000. The health share pays $19,000. We could have that for our own network. We could even work with an existing health share if it somehow has our values, or we could create an agorist health share, or we could do some sort of smart contract cryptocurrency thing, or we could just have people create a company and it's a little bit more legit, air quotes again. I don't know what that looks like, but the point is we can start providing those needs through the network in a mutually beneficial, voluntary way. And then once the network is large enough, we can leverage the strength in numbers phenomenon and opt out of the state while still peacefully coexisting with the statists, right? So this could take a variety of different forms. There could be literal geographic pockets where agorists, libertarians, Freedom Cell Network participants buy large pieces of land, 50 acres, 100 acres, 20 acres. Derek Bros aims to do this down in central Mexico, western Mexico. We want to do this here in central Texas. There's all sorts of folks that are interested in this idea. Many are doing it. Many are striving towards it. And so imagine two dozen micro communities, intentional communities where people are living there. They're self-sufficient, right? When you're self-sufficient, it's easier to be more free than if you're dependent on the state for food or for healthcare provisions, right? This is what they aim to do with mandatory vaccination or the vaccination scheme where they take away privileges if you don't take the vaccine, like you can't be employed here or there, you can't go to these grocery stores. There's even an article in the New England Journal of Medicine today that purported to do just that, encourages to do just that, to put these disincentives to take away privileges, penalties, and fees. They were even like, we shouldn't make it outright illegal where people get fined or arrested, because then that would allow for judicial inquiries about the legality of it. It's like, so we're going to do it anyway, like an end run around that judicial check and balance in air quotes again for the podcast audience. But imagine two dozen intentional communities, each one having 64 people, eight groups of eight, and those communities form a confederation of freedom cell communities, and they all get each other's back. And maybe on one day we all share our Declaration of Independence, and where we put the state on notice and let them know that we're no longer participating in their unethical institution. We think it's unethical, it's harmful. Frankly, we have no use for it. We're providing for ourselves, so on and so forth. But here's where I think the innovation can come in. I don't hear a lot of anarchist thinkers espousing this idea. So it's like, okay, we want to do our own thing. But then, you know, the rebuttal is always, well, you drive the roads, don't you? And you go here and there and you get benefits in this regard, whatever. So it's like, all right, we have become so self-sufficient where 95% of the shit we do on our own, and we benefit on our own. We engage in group activities to figure all that stuff out. For that last little 5%, it could be like, okay, we're going to pay the gasoline tax, or we agree to some sort of use tax or use fee whenever we do engage with the existing institution. I think this is really practical as well. There's papers and concepts of non-territorial governance where you can choose which operating system, essentially which legal system you want to utilize, perhaps for your marriage or for your business contract. There are special economic zones, or free private cities is another concept this guy Titus Gabel is pushing. And essentially you go in and you make a contract with the nation state whereby they give you a certain amount of freedom within your geographic area. And there's still some strings attached, like a micro tax or hiring people from the country, whatever. I'm not saying that's what I want to do, but there's already elements of this compromise freedom type deal, right? And as the state continues to undermine itself and delegitimize itself through all the crazy shit going on with Donald Trump, for example, and through everyone just seeing how the state is all corrupt, right? As we activists and educators pick off more people from the fringes of society and teach them, demonstrate them, show them that the state is illegitimate, then it's going to be easier to bring people into our network, into our fray, and eventually we'll have enough people where we can utilize the numbers in order to have leverage, right? So it's like, well, you know, we have 10,000 people in this county that are no longer going to pay property tax, and we're willing to come to the table to figure out how, what that looks like, because we're all peaceful people. We're also armed and we don't want any problems. So let's look at what this transition to autonomy for our community looks like. So I thought I'd end it up on there. This was a, you know, a talk on philosophy and stuff, but I'm very interested in where the rubber meets the road, the nuts and bolts, the meat of it. How do we get from here to there has always been something that's interested me. I hope I explain the philosophy of libertarianism, of anarchism, agorism, voluntarism pretty well and thoroughly, But really what's most important isn't the philosophical consistency or the foundation or how it relates to classical liberalism or whatever. Let's debate what this policy should be like that, blah, blah, blah. That's all unimportant in my opinion. There's enough of us that understand our nature as free human beings and sovereign human beings that it's time to move from philosophy to practical strategies and tactics in order to realize the freedom that we all deserve. And that's what the Freedom Cell Network is all about. All right, let me hit on some of your comments here. Balloon says, crypto will be the new currency. It'll just be plain ignorance to deny the future. I hate the idea of a cashless society, but can we really stop the madness? I think a statist form of cryptocurrency is what the governments are going to start using and central banks are going to start using. And there's going to be apps and there's going to be platforms and still cards and stuff. And people won't even recognize that it's being traded on cryptocurrency. I also do fear that with the creation of these digital assets, they're going to utilize blockchain technology, but it's not going to be a decentralized, peer-to-peer, distributed, censorship-proof, censorless blockchain. It's going to be a blockchain where at birth, you're given a number. It's like tied to your social security number or something. And that account can be turned off should your social credit score drop. This is the technocracy that we're headed to unless we all step up and put a stop to it. You know what I'm saying? Someone is still in charge of society and this has more rights than anyone else, which is corrupt. Yeah, equal rights means there shouldn't be two classes. There's all this talk about classism, the upper class, lower class, the bourgeoisie versus the proletariat. Well, libertarian class theory, agorist class theory, Murray Rothbard talked about this as well, is the productive class, those producers in society which are adding value to other human beings, the productive class, and the parasitic class or the political class, those bureaucrats, politicians, bankers, those folks that leech off of the body politic and they don't provide value or benefit to society. And so whenever you have a group of people that can appoint themselves or that can make laws that everyone else is required to follow, but they don't even have to follow, then you essentially have unequal rights. And it's a problem. That's why Cop Block had that thing. Badges don't grant extra rights. Really great, great tagline. Monopoly money and U.S. money, same color tint. Yep, it's very similar to Monopoly money. But still, I still want to stack me some Federal Reserve notes. They may be Federal Reserve notes and fake faux money, but I try to keep a nice little stash in my wallet. What? It's like $85. Nothing too crazy. I like to, whenever I have $100 bills, put it on the outside of my billfold so I can see the 100 and kind of think about money and it's a $100 bill rather than a couple ones. Right. I need to do an episode on money. I did some stuff on money before. It wasn't super popular on the Conscious Resistance channel, which is where the bulk of the live audience comes from. But I think it's super important. And almost every feed I do, I see people that are like, money's bad. Money's evil. We need a cashless society. No money. And I like to point out, somebody actually reached out to me today. They purchased some Kratom, but they said like, man, your talk about how we're dispelling money and pushing money away from our lives when we talk like this really hit home for me. Because there's a lot of people that are like, fuck money, money's bad, and they're living in poverty. It's like, huh, no wonder you don't have money because you think money is evil. And so when you hold that thought and that expression, and you're like, money's bad, money's corrupt, money's evil, we don't need money, money's cashless, money ain't going to come to you. But instead, if you're like, I know that in order to fulfill my wants and needs and to provide for my family the best that I can in order to live my dream life, which actually has a lot to do with some physical, materialistic things. Like I want a fancy ass RV, one of those big boys, maybe the ones that even have two wheels on the back, like a big old RV with the slide outs on the side, super luxury liner. We can just drive around in class, park it at the RV park, chill, go to the beach, go wherever, travel all around, go visit bros in Mexico. Although you may not want to drive a fancy thing down to Mexico, get stopped by cartels or something. It's relatively safe in Mexico, I should say, but I wouldn't drive a fancy ass car through Michoacan where Derek is. I want those things. I want to be filthy rich. I want to fly by private jet, skip the TSA, skip the line, fly and goof off and have fun in the private jet, play board games with the kids, and then show up to wherever, Disney World or whatever the fuck. So I want to attract money, and money's flowing to me, and that's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. So I always encourage people to be conscious of that. It's okay if you want to have a life in poverty, if you want to be a pauper, if you believe so strongly that money is such the root of evil, right? Money's just a tool, like a gun. It can be used for good purposes, defending your family, stopping a killer from hurting someone, or it can be used for evil purposes, robbing, theft, institutionalized theft. Just like money can be used to feed an addiction, or it can be used to buy politicians, it can also be used to support people, to feed the homeless, to improve your life so you can live your highest dreams. So just talking about money there. Yeah. David Graeber, the anthropologist and anarchist, one of the founders of the Occupy movement, proved that there was no barter systems. I'm pretty sure there was barter, and that was the early way that money came about and money evolved out of that. But I'd be curious to learn more about that. Maybe you can share in the comments any papers or articles or videos or whatever. Property rights are important. Owning land is a blessing. I should say, you know, a lot of early anarchism originated in the left anarchist, anti-capitalist. And a lot of the early stuff, like this guy, Peter Kropotkin, I don't know if I said that right. A lot of it was the idea that property is theft. There's even this guy, Benjamin Tucker, that was an early individualist anarchist in the United States experience. He held a lot of the same views as well. And the idea is that in order for people to own property, there needs to be a state to enforce those property rights. I don't think that this is true. I think that we can still maintain property without the enforcement mechanism being the state. There can still be courts or arbitration mechanisms that people opt into. There can still be private security that can help you defend your property, or you can be the one to defend your property and not outsource or abrogate or delegate that that right of defense. So just wanted to throw that out there. I'd like to do more research myself and present something that's more thorough on anarchism. There's this awesome documentary called The Monopoly of Violence. One of my fellow co-hosts on the Unloose the Goose podcast, Peter Quinones, he also does the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast with the, I think it's with Fee. Is it Fee? It's one of those think tank libertarian things, but a good one. And he helped to produce this documentary. There's a whole section towards the end of it, probably like 20 minutes, and it just lays out this really solid history of anarchism, going back to even before I even aware that anarchist was espoused. And they talk about the first guy that came up with the concept anarchism and the word anarchism. And then they get into the early roots and really point out that it was early leftist roots, right? But again, as long as there's no ruler, you can have the anarcho-syndicalist thing and the little communal thing, and you can have the, I don't think you can have anarcho-communism. That doesn't seem right. And you can have the anarcho-capitalist and the agorist. And ideally, if the guys on the left weren't so damn anti-property and anti-capitalist, then maybe there could be some jiving going on. But a lot of the anti-capitalists are like, no, this is the way that it has to be for everyone globally. We will not rest until capitalism is destroyed. Now let me tweet about it on my smartphone. Right? All righty. Okay, guys. I think I'm going to wrap it up. I appreciate everybody tuning in today to the Live Free Now show, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free, prosperous, and healthy life. We are rocking and rolling, moving and grooving, trying to do a show almost every day during the week if I can. I also have aspirations to do a live show where it's like every weekday at 11 a.m. you can expect this show, you know, and then we could do call-ins. I could get a producer and you could call into the program and stuff. Thinking about that, just kicking around. But either way, I just want to let you know that I really appreciate you tuning in and giving us a listen. I appreciate you for exploring these radical alternative ideas. And I appreciate especially those of you that are taking action and aren't just thinking about things and reading about things and talking about things on social media. But more importantly, you are helping to create all of this stuff. Because it's one thing to talk about it and explore the philosophical roots of liberty and anarchism and freedom. And it's a whole nother thing, very much more important thing, to get out there and to innovate, to create alternative institutions, to educate people about alternative institutions and to join in the creation of the free society that we all deserve, right? So we can have an understanding of the philosophy, and then we could actually live the philosophy. And that's a very beautiful thing. And if you're wanting to do that with over 4,000 people, chances are there's somebody in your area. I strongly encourage you to go to Live Free Now. Sorry, you can go to Live Free Now to subscribe to the podcast. Go to freedomcells.org, 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 and join the network, decentralized, peer-to-peer, voluntary, a lot of people doing things, helping one another, planting gardens, going to the shooting range, squatting up, coming up with a bug out plan. We're doing it, and we want it to grow to 10,000 people, probably 10,000 people maybe in the next few months, to 100,000 people, to 250,000 people, to where there's 1,000 people in your city. You guys meet up, you work together, you squat up, you grow food, you do bulk purchases of ammo, of food storage, all sorts of stuff. And then when the time's right, we all opt out en masse. A lot of people are already opted out. Like old Derek Bros, he's fucking outside the system like a mofo, right? But some people have property. Some people have this. They work for this company, so on and so forth. They have 401k. Everyone's on different levels of freedom and willing to take on different levels of risk. But whenever we have the strength in numbers, I don't know what that number is, but I think we could all opt out together and live as free as possible. All right, John Bush, peace and freedom. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, one more thing. Somebody's saying, Looney Larpster, I disagree. Taxation are violating your rights. It's a public financing mechanism. The problem is that our tax dollars are being stolen and spent on violence. Well, that's the thing. If you don't consent to giving the money and it's extracted from you through coercion, the fear of violence being inflicted upon you, then it necessarily is a violation of your rights. If you appreciate the service that government provides and you appreciate living in a democratic republic or a democracy and or an oligarchy is really what it is, and you're like a Republican or Democrat voter and you feel it's your civic duty and you have pride in paying your tax bill, then it isn't a violation of rights. But it most definitely is a violation of my rights because I reject wholeheartedly the institution of government, even if that government was doing good work or more of a night watchman micronation. I don't think that we should be subjected and forced into participation by virtue of being birthed in a given geographic area. It is a violation of rights. Taxation is theft if you object to it and don't want to participate. Plain and simple. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. This is John Bush. I'm out. Subscribe to the podcast, livefreenow.show.